from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Christian Fowler is on X at CFowlerBCM. He's a senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. We have a podcast released every single Tuesday at noon called the On the Bluff Podcast. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. Christian, how's it going, brother?
Everything's wonderful, Gabe. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I can't complain. We have a big game coming up on Saturday.
Yeah.
I do know that for the Memphis Tigers.
I've heard.
Yeah. I want to start there because I'm curious. I see this line, this betting line. Does Vegas know something that we don't? It opened at 1.5. Florida State was favored by at home, 11 a.m. on Saturday. Now it's at 6.5. Does Vegas know something that we don't, or are they just adjusting it on the fly here?
It seems like it, because 1.5, we talked about it last night on the podcast. We both kind of expected it to move a little bit towards Florida State with the bye week and just how desperate they are for a win. But to move 5 points, and I think some places it's up to 7.5 already. So to see it move that much already is a little shocking, and it kind of does make you wonder, is there something going on that we don't know? I don't know. Maybe. It feels like it, at least.
Well, the only thing I could think of that could make it move without, the only thing that I think could make it move is a quarterback switch, but also I did sort of think about it. We talked about it on the podcast. Is it just them finally realizing, Vegas finally realizing, well, Florida State has an extra week to prepare, and they're going to be angry. They're 0-2. This is their last-ditch effort to show that they have a little bit of power this year.
Outside of a quarterback change, that is, to me, the only thing that makes sense. And talking about concerns going into this game, the only two that I have are what you mentioned. Florida State's right. Coming off a bye week, and they desperately need to win this game to salvage any kind of season. That's it. Outside of that, I don't have on-the-field concerns, really. The only one that I can point to is Memphis going to be ready at the time the ball kicks off? You know, is there going to be a little bit of shock factor? Not that they can't handle the moment, but just, settling in, first road game of the season in a hostile environment, regardless of how bad the team has been so far. Just thinking about it, there's not an environment close to that this current iteration of the Memphis Tigers have played in. They're not used to that many people, that much noise, that much, of a crowd factor. So those are the only things that concern me. If it's a neutral site game and Florida State had played last week, let's say they didn't play week zero, they just played week 1 and 2, like Memphis, and lost those two games to Georgia Tech and Boston College, then I wouldn't have any concern at all. But the extra week to prepare, even though they've looked so bad, if you give a coaching staff, especially a good coaching staff, I know it's been rough so far, but Mike Norvell is a good coach and he has a good staff. It's tough to be a team like that when right. They have 2 weeks to prepare for the same opponent, backed against the wall. That is a hard deficit to go up against. Now, am I saying Memphis can't go in there, play great from the opening kick and win that game? Absolutely not. I believe they're fully 100% capable of winning that game. They have to be their best from the beginning. They
right.
can't fall into a hole. They can't let Florida State get into a neutral or positive game script where they're able to control the ball a little bit more. They need to force them into passing situations, if Florida State is going to win that game, make DJU have to make throws. That's the biggest thing. Don't let them get.
Or if Memphis is going to win that game, you mean? Or if you're going to win that game, if you're Memphis.
If you're going to win that game, right. If you're Memphis.
Yeah.
Yes, no, not for Florida State.
Yeah, I was going to say. I don't think DJU in third and long is great for Florida State.
No, it's terrible for Florida State. But, yes, that's what I'm saying. If Memphis is going to go to Tallahassee and win this game, they've got to force DJU to throw the ball on you know, obvious passing situations, third and long, second and long, getting behind the sticks.
And then also get after him, too. Blitz a little bit. I don't mind a little five-man, six-man pressure. That works against that guy. I saw it in the Boston College game. I saw it in the Georgia Tech game. Now, what is the formula offensively for Memphis? Because that's something that I think a lot of people struggle with, because the first two teams that handled Florida State were very physical, really good offensive lines. I'm not saying Memphis doesn't have it. I saw them against Troy. They look pretty damn good, and Mario Anderson Jr. definitely has a physicality about him, the way he runs. He runs angry. But they also had the quarterback run, which Memphis doesn't necessarily have. What's the formula, do you think, offensively for Memphis to get after this Florida State team?
Set the tone early physically, like you just said, with this offensive line, with Mario Anderson, get them back on their heels, and then really mix in the play-action passing game, the RPO, keep them guessing the entire game. I don't think this is one where it's like, okay, Memphis needs to double the time of possession. They need to really slow this game down and keep dynamic offense off the field. It's not that, because Florida State doesn't have that. It's, yes, you want to be physical. You want to keep them guessing. But I think you also definitely need to have chunk plays, explosive offensive plays in this game, because if you're able to build a 10-point lead or a 2-touchdown lead, Florida State is probably not catching that.
And also, I think there's that thought in the back of all of our heads. I mean, if you get up by a couple of touchdowns, you may watch that team quit right in front of you.
Exactly. Especially early. Say in the first quarter and a half, if Memphis was up by 14, we could probably see that team quit. With what's happened so far this year, how difficult it's been, especially if DJU is, turning the ball over, making errant passes. So to me, that's it. Offensively, physical, I'm not even going to necessarily say control the clock, keep the other offense off the field. Just be physical, be able to have the threat of running the ball, and get your vertical passing game working. It doesn't all have to be underneath. It doesn't all have to be intermediate. You can get chunk plays, explosive plays in this game, and not have to worry about, oh my gosh, if we score quick, this other dynamic offense is going to go out there. That's just not the case with Florida State. And then defensively, you said bringing pressure. Look, if you bring blitzes on a good percentage of the plays in this game and you get beat once or twice, I am totally okay with that.
Right.
Because DJU is going to make more mistakes than he makes good plays if he's sped up, if he's moved off his mark, if he's got pressure in his face. So aggressiveness on both sides of the ball. Just go out there and leave it out there. Play, call the game exactly how you want to. Don't hold any punches. Go do everything you can to win this game.
Now, here's the real question. How much have the first two performances, and I think the run game in North Alabama we could leave out of this, but maybe we'll just talk about the Troy game and how they performed, because I thought it was workmanlike whole thing. But how much did that game go to making you think that they can go ahead and execute these keys to the game we just talked about against Florida State?
It gives me way more confidence, because after the North Alabama game, we were talking about after, Florida State lost to Georgia Tech, okay, Memphis is going to be able to control the line of scrimmage and run the ball.
Right.
And then they go out against North Alabama, and they could not run the ball against North Alabama. So as bad as Florida State had looked in that Georgia Tech game, it was like, okay, if Memphis can't run the ball in North Alabama, then there's no way they can run the ball on Florida State, no matter their deficiencies. But to see this week what they did on the ground, Mario Anderson, obviously, 17 carries, 125 yards. Greg DeRozier chipped in almost 60 yards. Brandon Thomas with two goal line touchdowns.
He might end up with, 15 carries for 15 yards and 15 touchdowns this year?
He just might. It is highly possible. But I feel much more confident than I did after the North Alabama game. And we talked about it last week. It was, is that going to be the outlier? Is that going to be the game where they really were just super vanilla and they were still gelling and getting their chemistry as an offensive line with so many new starters? or was that what we were going to see the majority of the season? Memphis be stuck in neutral, not able to run the ball. And if we're just basing it off the Troy game, then week one looks more like an outlier. And that's a great thing going into this Florida State game, because if they can, like I've said multiple times, and I just think it's so important, keeping them guessing, not having to be one-dimensional offensively because you can't run the ball. If you keep them on their heels, you're physical with them, mix in the play-action game, mix in the RPO game. If you're running the ball effectively, I think Memphis wins this game. If they run the ball effectively, if they're able to get into second and shorts, third and shorts, yep, just have manageable down and distances, which will be more than likely an asset of the run game, I think they beat Florida State if they can run the ball.
Yeah. Now, one thing that is kind of strange about this matchup now, since what we thought going into the preseason and, well, really into the season, thought this would be a top 10 matchup. You're going on the road, free shot, blah, blah, blah. Memphis is more the ranked team than Florida State is at this point. Yep. Memphis at least got in the coaches poll at 25. They're still, what, right around 30, I guess, in the AP, because Northern Illinois jumped up over everybody to get in at 25 after the Notre Dame win. But it is kind of strange to see, yeah, sure, Memphis isn't favored, but they're more the ranked team than Florida State is.
Yeah, and even though the circumstances have changed a lot, I would have really liked to see Ryan Silverfield and the staff call this game the same way that we thought they would coming into the season.
Right.
Nothing to lose. Go out there, let it all hang out. Play the game like that. Do not play to not lose.
Don't play tight. No reason to.
Yes, if they get conservative in this game, I will be extremely shocked if they win. They cannot be conservative. They cannot try to sit on the ball and control the clock the whole entire game. It doesn't need to be that. It needs to be called the same way offensively and defensively as if Florida State was a top 10 team that Memphis wasn't expected to be. They need to go let it all hang out. They need to get creative with their blitz packages. They need to get creative on the offensive side of the ball. Just go play to win the game. Don't play to not lose the game.
I hear you. I absolutely hear you. And now I want to move on to this, and I don't want to spend too much time on it because it has been talked out to a certain degree. But Penny Hardaway, Memphis basketball, you had four coaches fired last week. Now you have the anonymous letter that has been acknowledged by the University of Memphis and sent into the NCAA that alleges a $30,000 payment to DeAndre Williams, $60,000 payment to Emmanuel Aycott, and the academic fraud that got Malcolm Dandridge in hot water last year at the end of the season. Then you had, on the Jeff Calkins show last Friday, new Memphis AD Ed Scott joined, sort of tried to shed some light. Penny talked to John Rothstein. It was a week of drama, a week of dysfunction last week for Memphis basketball.
Yeah, and the biggest thing to me, like you said, it's been talked about ad nauseum over the last week because it's been a massive story, a national story. But to me, more than anything, it just sucks for the fan base.
Yep.
Because it's been a roller coaster ride the last 6 years, regardless of how you look at it. There's been the great recruiting classes. There's been the down years where there's unexpected losses. There's been the tournament appearances and the tournament win and conference championship. There's been good and bad. But this is overwhelmingly negative. And the reason I think it sucks even more is because after the Malcolm Dandridge stuff, when last spring or last winter, whenever February, March, whenever that stuff came out, it has been extremely quiet since that point. Memphis, the staff went out, they landed some really solid transfer portal additions that fit the scheme very well. They got them in early, most of them in July. We felt way better about that than we have the last couple of years. Felt like, okay, this team should have chemistry. By the time they get to the floor, there was a little bit of coaching turnover, but you felt good about, Rick Stansberry coming back, being the main assistant, Penny being able to hold on to his main assistant for a second season. You had to feel good about that. And it was just quiet. It was a pretty drama-free offseason for Memphis basketball after the allegations, after the academic allegations. And then 2 months before the season, you get four coaches fired. You get the anonymous letter. And it's like, oh, my gosh, there can't be a positive for this program without a negative shortly following it. And so for me, more than anything, it's just like I feel bad for the fan base because it's the right. constant pendulum swing. It's the constant roller coaster, whatever other analogy you want to use. It's just back and forth, up and down all the time. It can't be steady, and that has to be frustrating for Memphis fans.
And I think there's a lot of people in the fan base that are exhausted just with the situation. But like I said this on the podcast last night, but the moves that were made, like even with the anonymous letter with the coaches being fired, it's not what was done, it's how it was done, right? It's the timing right. with which you fired all these coaches, and it's the fact that the University of Memphis not only sent the anonymous letter into the NCAA, but also released it to the media for everyone to see, which they didn't have to. Like, it's not what was done, it's how everything was done last week.
Yeah, and that seems to be a trend that we've seen. And I think the word that you use is the best. It's exhausting. It's nonstop. It is one thing after the other. And it's hard to... I would say it's probably hard to stay supportive of it all as a Memphis fan. Because
sure.
if it was 10 positives in a row, and then you get a blip on the radar of a negative, that's one thing. That's what pretty much every program in the country deals with. It's not all going to be sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah, and I will...
Go ahead.
My bad. Apologies.
Yeah, but just the overall amount of negativity, and the way that I phrased it last night was just kind of a dark cloud that's hung around this program. It might not have always been in the spotlight. It might not have always been prevalent, but there was a lot of times when it showed up, and it's exhausting. That is, to me, the best word to use to describe it. It's absolutely exhausting.
And the thing is, I think this was a lot of Ed Scott coming in. I don't think it's any coincidence that he takes over the job 7 to 8 weeks ago, and now you have all these sweeping changes in the basketball program. I think there was definitely an acknowledgement from him that this is not how you need to run a high-level basketball program. I will give him, you know, some props here, because he came in, he recognized a problem that we have been seeing for a little bit, for quite a bit, actually, and he decided to do something about it. That's what it looks like from the outside.
Yeah, and if this leads to positive down the road, then great. But if it's just one and another, and it just keeps coming, then... That's frustrating. But
right.
if this is him coming in and trying to right the ship and get things right behind the scenes, and it pans out, and it, you know, it's smooth sailing from here, then we can look back at this moment and say that was great. Glad that happened. Glad things got cleaned up, and it's been easy going from that point. But if it's a continuation, then it's, you know, something's got to happen. It can't continue to be one thing after the other. Eventually, it has to get on solid ground.
Yep, I hear you. Now, talking with Christian Fowler at C. Fowler BCM, senior writer and content creator at Bluff City Media. I do have to give an applause real quick to your Cowboys. I'm talking to Mr. Cowboy right now. Good dub to start the year against the Browns. And also, good on the Joneses to get the damn Dak Prescott deal done. $60 million per, baby. It needed to happen. It looks like a lot of money, but hey, it is what it is. It's the market.
Yeah, it's what you got to do, and in 2 years it'll be middle of the road. You know, not middle of the road, but
well,
middle of the top
hopefully.
10.
Yeah, hopefully middle of the road.
You know, it'll be middle of the top 10, bottom of the top 10 in a couple of years. That's just it's cyclical. That's how it works. That's how it was last time Dak got paid. He was either one or two, I believe, when he got paid last time, and right now I think he's 9 or 10. Or before this deal was done, he was like 9 or 10. So. It's just the cycle. It's how it goes. He's going to be the highest paid for a year at most, probably, and then you'll see more extensions. So it's part of it. It's what you got to do. To me, it's not a big deal. I'm glad it got done. It's wild that it took up until an hour before kickoff of week one for it to happen. But it did, and that's all that matters. He's under contract. CeeDee Lamb's under contract. CeeDee Lamb made it out of week one healthy, which is always a concern when a skilled player is not in training camp or in OTAs and misses all of that. He made it out of week one healthy, so that was great. But it was the defense that shined in this one. They were incredible against Deshaun Watson, who I think a real conversation is starting to be had of if he is just completely cooked, and it looks like it. And I think it's partially he does not fit Kevin Stefanski's system whatsoever. And then the rest of it is probably, I don't know, just a mental thing, just having gone through everything that he's done and everything that he's been, you know, alleged to do and all the drama that came with that. That's got to add up. So he looks terrible, but the defense was great. Linebacking core looked really good with the addition of Eric Kendricks, DeMarvion Overshown back in his second year after tearing his ACL as a rookie. DeMarcus Lawrence and Michael Parsons did their thing, did what they always do. And fifth-round rookie starting at corner for Deron Bland, Kalen Carson played really well also for the majority of the game. So at least in week one, it was a good time to be a Cowboys fan.
Now, there's a lot of storylines you follow in any week one of the NFL season, but one that I'm following really closely, quarterback play seems down across the league. There's two quarterbacks last week, or this week in week one, that threw for over 300 yards, Tua Tagovailoa and Matt Stafford. Then there was 17 starting quarterbacks who threw for under 200, including like all the rookie quarterbacks. All the rookie quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams only threw for 93 yards. Bo Nix looked really bad, even though I was writing his Hall of Fame speech a couple of weeks ago. But what is going on? Like, what do you think the big issue is early in this season with quarterback play around the league?
Yeah, I think it's a trend that we're going to continue to see. When you have less practices, less opportunities to get game-like reps, and I know a lot of teams have come out and said, well, we feel like the inter-squad practices with other teams have allowed us game-like atmospheres and have allowed us to sit our starting quarterbacks in the preseason. But the fact of the matter is that it's been sloppy. And this was the sloppiest year yet, at least in recent memory. Last year wasn't too much better. I think it was better, but not by much. And I think you don't see any of the stars play in the preseason anymore, which on the same token of that, I can't blame them. They've got to play 18 games plus playoffs if you make it now. Three more games is just more to add on. But we used to see starting quarterbacks play, you know, maybe a half or a couple of drives in the first three games and sit the last game. And it made quarterback play so much better because you got those live game reps. You were able to, you know, to see things and get into the groove and get into a feel, even if it wasn't, you know, a meaningful game that counted against the record. You just had more reps. You had more opportunities to get game reps, and they don't have that anymore. So unless something changes, unless teams start playing starting quarterbacks in the preseason again, which is not going to happen, then I think it is going to be, you know, week one and week two are probably going to be pretty sloppy, and then week three and week four we'll see an uptick in production and quarterbacks. And I think that's probably just the new norm. And it's not only quarterbacks. It's really across the board, just sloppy play, penalties, drops, all these types of things.
Right.
It's really like the season doesn't officially start until like week three or four of this is this team, this is what they are, this is how good they are. We don't know much after the first couple weeks of the season anymore. It's very up in the air still.
Yeah, and when it comes to week one passing touchdown production, this is, you know, in the last 5 years, this is by far the lowest amount of passing touchdowns we saw in week one. And yeah, I agree with most of what you're saying, and I think that is a contributing factor. But also, I think we have seen like a transition. Like even the Chiefs run the ball, try to find a way to you know, bring a little bit of power, along with their finesse. Although I don't think they did that necessarily great in week one, but they were playing against the Ravens defense, who's always pretty stout. But like, there's more two high safety looks. There's just more high safeties in general. People are trying to limit the big play, and I think that we have, you know, over the past, I don't know, 5 to 7 years, I think a lot of quarterbacks have fallen into the habit of trying to make the big play whenever they possibly can, not living for another down. And I think the quarterbacks that check the ball down, make the right play consistently, are the ones who are just having success early in the season. Patrick Mahomes was good. Baker Mayfield did it at a very high level. Tua Tagovailoa does it at a very high level. Just keeps you on pace. Like, I just think that the amount of high safeties we're seeing, the more too high looks we're getting, the less production we're seeing from these quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because we've seen this shift in the NFL towards stopping the deep ball, limiting the big plays, and what comes with that is more run attempts and then more underneath throws. So touchdowns were down, but I think you already said it. The 300-yard passers, there was only two, so yardage was down in a big way. Yep. Also, what weeks of the NFL season are there only two 300-yard passers?
Well, what weeks are there 17 quarterbacks of the 32 that are under 200 yards? That's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's insane. And I can kind of tie it back to my other point as well of just less preparation. Offensively, there are so many intricacies. There's so many things that have to go right. Defensively, I'm not saying there aren't, because there are. There are a lot of different schemes. Sure. There are a lot of different ways to play. But what we're seeing more and more with less reps in the preseason is defenses are ahead to start the year.
Yep.
The defenses are more on schedule than the offenses are, because it's just easier to adapt. You don't need as much time. Play calls are a lot less than they are on the offensive side of the ball. Offensive play calls, as we all know, are pretty insane. And so when you've got younger guys in there, when you've got offensive linemen who really haven't hit much at all or gotten much live pass blocking or run blocking at all, it's just going to be sloppy, and the defense is going to have the advantage. And it really has been like the last 3 or 4 years we've kind of shifted more towards that, knowing, okay, week one is going to be pretty lackluster from a big play standpoint. Week two is not going to be far behind. The defenses are just ahead now early in the season.
Yep. Yep. I wonder how long it's going to last, though, this year. Because there was a point we broke through last year. But we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it. But, Christian, I appreciate it, man. We'll do it again next week.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.